Will the Lord be with you? Amen. This morning we begin a three-part series of sermons around the theme Redeeming Lament. And just to give you an overview of this series and where we're going with it, today's focus is on why lament is a necessary act of healthy Christian faith. Next Sunday we'll be focused on living in the tension of our painful experiences and God's promises for a hopeful future. And on November 17th, we will practice lament in our worship and have a tangible opportunity to bring our laments to the Lord. Learning to lament, living in lament, practicing lament. My prayer for our congregation and for anyone listening online is that our focus on the scriptures and stories of lament will help us along the road from hurt to hope. Well, let's begin first defining the terms. What is lament? At its most basic, lament is making a complaint. It is expressing to God verbally, even bodily, the full scope of our human emotions and our painful experiences. The raw feelings of hurt, pain, anger, frustration, resentment. When the psalmist in today's reading says, "Day and night I cry out to you," he is lamenting. I began to explore this topic of lament a couple of years ago. I had preached a sermon, and I had brought up the issue of trauma healing and the practice of lament. And to my surprise, several people reached out to me afterward, and they were trying to understand their hardship in the light of their Christian faith. And as I talked to people, it seemed like there were two ways that they viewed hardship. One was that if they prayed hard enough and were good enough and spiritual enough, then God would take away their hurt or change their circumstances. The second was to focus on the future idea that one day they would be in heaven and their troubles would be all forgotten. Now, there is some truth to both of these ideas. As Christians, we confess that God is not far off away from us, but God is with us and actually brings change and hope and healing into our lives. It is right to trust that God can bring this change, but the way God works is not based on merit. We don't earn God credits, so to speak, with our prayers or our good deeds that we can then apply to the prayers we really want God to answer. We all wish it worked that way, huh? But that means that we have to trust God when we cry out. And as we see in our Psalms of Lament, and we'll see throughout the series, lament even includes expressing to God our frustration when it seems like God is not showing up. Well, similarly, it is good and right to look forward to and receive inspiration and strength from God's promise of a future reality where injustice is wiped out and tears wiped away. But if we settle with simply waiting for that future, we miss the opportunities to see and be a part of how God is bringing hope and healing and renewal to our lives and this world. What I discovered a couple of years ago was that our congregation then did not know how to lament. To cry out to God expressing our rawest human emotions, it's kind of embarrassing. But it was also theologically off limits. It certainly was not a part of our Sunday morning experience, and I imagine some of you right now, yeah, let's keep it that way here, please, Pastor. Well, I did sort of a deep dive study on the topic of lament. And I learned that scholars in all sorts of fields have been talking about what I had experienced for some time. I don't have time to share all their insights, but the general consensus of scholars is that the white American church does not know how to lament. Instead of admitting weakness or defeat, our faith is one that almost exclusively emphasizes victory and celebration. Scholars have studied worship books and hymnals and sermons and Bible commentaries and popular contemporary worship songs, and across the board, they have found a lack of expressions of lament in our worship. Now, this is a bit academic, but the driving question is very practical. How do we deal with suffering and loss as Christians? I've seen too many people beat themselves up by spiritualizing their suffering. God let this happen to me because I did this or I didn't do that. Or sometimes gripped by images of a wrathful God, they feel that God will smite them if they dare express anything negative toward God. We do destruction to our lives, emotionally, spiritually, when we do not develop a capacity to lament. And when we don't know how to lament with others or to suffer with them, our tendency is to either distance ourselves from them or to apply our resourcefulness to fix their problems for them. This is why we must learn to lament. So let's look at our scripture readings for this morning. There's two readings. And just to begin, I'll invite you to turn to Psalm 88. It's number 474 in the Bible in your pews. And before we get to that, the first reading is the very popular passage from Hebrews. Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. That alone is enough scriptural warrant to engage in the practice of lament. It's a great verse of hope and encouragement, and it's contrasted with Psalm 88 this morning. And I want to spend a few minutes exploring that. Again, that's page 474 in the Bibles. Now, just to put this into perspective, there's 150 psalms in the book of Psalms, and over a third of those psalms are psalms of lament. Now, Psalm 88 is one of only two of those psalms of lament that does not end by pointing the reader and the prayer toward hope. This entire psalm is an outpouring of the poet's despair. And there's only one plea in the psalm, one ask. Throughout the whole psalm, it comes in verse 2. Let my prayer come before you. Incline your ear to my cry. A simpler way to translate this is, God, I am praying, listen to me. Now you'll notice the heading of Psalm 88. It is written by none other than Haman the Ezraite, everyone's favorite Bible character, right? Who is Haman the Ezraite? Well, we actually learn about Haman in 1 Chronicles when he is listed as one of the musicians whom David appointed to lead the worship for Israel. And this is a big deal. The temple was built in Jerusalem, and the Ark of the Covenant, which was God's presence with the people through the wilderness, had come to settle in Jerusalem. It was in the center of the temple, and this was basically Israel's church for all of the people to come to worship the Lord. And Haman was one of the leaders of this church. And here's what this tells us. The leader of Israel's worship made room for unresolved lament. And we also learn about Haman in 1 Kings, where he is named as one of the wisest people in Israel. They were trying to describe just how wise King Solomon had become. And it says, he was even wiser than Haman the Ezraite. And here's what this tells us. To be wise and discerning is not to be dispassionate. Wisdom is not without feeling. In fact, it was a feeling, the fear of the Lord, that King Solomon wrote, is the beginning of all wisdom. The last thing to note about Haman is that his name means faithful. To lament, to express the full scope of human emotion to God, does not reveal a lack of faith or irreverence. When we, like Haman the Ezraite, cry out to God day and night, our lament is truly an act of faith. So Haman cried out to the Lord day and night, and throughout the psalm, the image of darkness is employed repeatedly to describe his desperate situation and his impending death if God does not act. And here are some of the ways he describes his situation. My soul is full of troubles. My life draws near to Sheol, the place of the dead. I have no help, am forsaken, slain, forgotten, cut off. And then he turns to God. God, you overwhelm me with your waves. You have cast me off. You hide your face from me, a Hebrew expression meaning to remove your favor from someone. Your wrath has swept over me. Your dread assaults destroy me. Notice that Haman attributes the darkness he experiences to God. And about the darkness, he says the following, verse 1, at night I cry out. Verse 6, you've put me in the depths of the pit, in the regions dark and deep. Verse 9, my eye grows dim with sorrow. Verse 12, are your wonders known in the darkness? And the last verse, verse 18, my companions are in darkness, or as some translations put it, darkness is my closest companion. One commentator breaks this psalm into four messages. The first, Lord, it is dark. The second, with a bit of sarcasm, do miracles happen in the darkness? Third, I am alone in the darkness. And fourth, even in the darkness, I continue to pray. Have you ever sung a song like this in church? This is what we call a dirge. There is no answer, lots of emotion, and yet a continual prayer to God. This is an example of lament as an act of faith, of approaching the throne of grace with confidence. Well, we'll have two more Sundays in this series to dig into this a bit more. But I want to conclude with a few descriptions of what happens when we lament. When we lament, we confess the brokenness of our lives and of our world. The biblical word here is groaning. This is a word used throughout the scriptures to describe the breadth and depth of human suffering. It was used to describe Israel calling out to God from slavery. It is used to describe the deep loneliness of Judah in exile and the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple. And the Apostle Paul used this word, groaning, the groaning of creation and the Spirit who speaks for us with wordless groans. That's Romans chapter 8. And that we groan, longing for our bodies to be redeemed. 2 Corinthians chapter 5. The groans of our lives and our world over sin, death, suffering, oppression, injustice, broken relationships, addictions, illnesses, and so on. These are our confession to God that things are not right. Secondly, when we lament, we join Jesus in his lament. The book of Psalms, it was Jesus' prayer book. Can you imagine Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane praying Psalm 88 at night, distressed to the point of sweating, bleeding, tirelessly calling out to God, looking around for friends and advocates, and finding his closest companions asleep and unavailable. Jesus praying with the psalmist, "Darkness is my closest companion." Jesus lamented the impact of death on the town of Bethany when Lazarus died. The Gospel of Luke captures the story of Jesus heading to Jerusalem, and when the city comes into sight, Jesus weeps, lamenting over the city, lamenting as a mother, as a father, watching their child do something that they know will only lead to their destruction. We join with Jesus when we lament. Third, when we lament, we call God out and we challenge God to act decisively for the good of the world. Sounds audacious, I know. But we provoke God to look on suffering with mercy and to bring redemption. We see this in the repetition of the Psalms, where there are very few requests, but a steady litany of demands for God to wake up, to rise up, and to come to our defense. A couple of weeks ago, we read the parable of the widow going to the corrupt judge over and over again, and that is what this is all about. When we lament, we protest what is wrong in our lives and in the world. We join with Jesus' cry, and we challenge God to act decisively for the good of creation. And finally, when we lament, we share with the cries of others. We become advocates, priests, for others, calling on God to act for their sake, to lament with another, to sit with them in their suffering, is one of the most priestly things we can do. I use that word priest. It simply means one who mediates between God and a person. And we are invited to do that when we lament with others. The most thorough experience of suffering detailed in the Bible comes in the book of Job. Job's suffering, it's intended to represent the greatest suffering we can experience. The most powerful scene in this book, in my opinion, comes in chapter 2. Listen to this. When Job's three friends heard about all the troubles that had come upon him, they set out from their homes and met together by agreement to go and sympathize with him and comfort him. When they saw him from a distance, they could hardly recognize him. They began to weep aloud, and they tore their robes and sprinkled dust on their heads. Then they sat on the ground with him for 7 days and 7 nights, No one said a word to him because they saw how great his suffering was. They sat in silence with their friend for 7 days. It was the greatest gift they could offer Job. It was when they opened their mouths that things started getting hairy. When we lament, we confess the brokenness of our lives and of our world. We join Jesus in his lament. We challenge God to show up and act decisively for our good. And we share in the sufferings of others. We'll have more to say in the next 2 weeks. But let me end with this. Learning to lament is a hopeful endeavor. When we lament, we grow more intimate in our communion with God, our oneness with God. And as we'll explore further, God puts us on the road from hurt to hope. The great legacy of our faith, from the Jewish roots to Christ, to the apostles and the church for the last 2,000 years, has given us resources for bringing the hardest parts of our lives to God. So let us take a moment to be silent in prayer and bring the laments that come to our minds, whether for ourselves or for others, before the Lord.